Message and data rates may apply. Consult a doctor prior to use.
Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
The evidence is gone, but the nightmare continues. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring former prosecutor and defense attorney Eric Faddis.
The verdict in the Richard Allen case is guilty. It's one that I think surprised many. Many were happy with it, feeling that justice has been served. It's left a community kind of grappling for the answer to, did they get the right man? Is the person who killed those two little girls, Abigail Williams and Liberty German, in 2017 still at large? Or is this our man? Joining me to discuss, Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor. Eric, what was your reaction to the verdict that came in?
You know, a little surprising to me and a lot of legal observers, when you have Nancy Grace say, who's a hardline law and order prosecutor friendly person, saying, I don't know if the prosecution has the goods on this. It's pretty unexpected to see these convictions across the board, but that is ultimately what the jury decided.
It's spooky to me to see how basically the characters of this story and the rules for this story were dictated by one person, by Judge Gull, basically setting up her characters. Here's how it's all going to play out. Here's what you're allowed to know. Here's what you're allowed to say. And I know this is normal to a certain extent, but she really, dare I say, rigged this in a way that Richard Allen, there's no way he could get most of his story out. I feel like the jury only truly heard about 25% of it.
Yeah, I mean, the judge is supposed to be neutral and impartial, but some people think from the very beginning she has handcuffed the defense throughout his entire proceedings. And this trial is no exception to that. She excluded what was the main defense that Richard Allen wanted to run. She excluded other evidence that would have been favorable to the defense. And so did the jury really get a full picture in terms of what happened from both sides? I think there are some doubts as to that.
Is there any... I just hate this when this happens, because it really puts a black eye on our justice system when there really seems to be some very narrow-minded work that was done here. I mean, on the part of Gull. Now, I'm not saying she did it on purpose per se. I don't know, but it seems like, you know, they were on a mission. They had their blinders on, and what they were going to say was right, no matter what. Is there any recourse to any of this when someone else takes a look at this and goes, what the hell were they doing? Like, how did they not allow him to argue these basic things in his own defense? Is there anything that can go back? Number one, obviously, in appeals for Richard Allen, we'll talk about that, but also, I think more specifically, for Judge Gull, for the way this whole thing was handled. Is there ever a slap on the wrist at the least? Is there ever anything that can be done to correct this? Because I'm guessing if this is how she handled this case, and it's the one we watched, I'd be curious to see the others as well.
Well, the first avenue of recourse is going to be the appeal of the convictions, the appellate process. And Judge Gall being so kind of one-sided, really sort of gave the defense several gifts in terms of grounds they can argue on appeal. And so this conviction could potentially be overturned. On top of that, most states have a judicial ethics committee that sort of will look at things. And if there's a complaint of improper bias, of favoring one side when they shouldn't have, those things can be explored too. And sometimes disciplinary action is taken against judges, although it's very rare.
Sometimes. Does it do anything? is it more like, we're going to do an internal investigation here ourselves and see if there's something wrong. And most of the times internal investigations don't necessarily pull up a whole lot of anything.
You know, that's how it works in Colorado where I practice, where if there's a complaint against the judicial branch, the agency investigating it is the judicial branch. And so they're investigating themselves. And so there is some inherent bias, or at least the appearance of bias, in those proceedings. And do they ever result in a judge being disciplined? I can only think of two cases in Colorado in the past like 10 years or so, and that's compared to the umpteen complaints that have been filed over the years. So pretty unusual for a judge to be disciplined.
Is that something that needs to be improved upon, in your opinion, as a defense attorney? Is that something where we need true checks and balances on this system? Because that doesn't really sound like a true check and balance right there. It's like an illusion of it. Should we have more things like that? I'm not even speaking specifically here of Gull, just in general, because it seems that things like this can happen quite readily and quite easily and only really get out there if anybody's paying attention. And this is one case we're watching. There's thousands and thousands of them going on every single day. There's not really a watchdog for this, and it doesn't seem to police itself all that well.
You hit the nail on the head. And you know, one thing that comes up is there's this idea of the black robe syndrome, right? So when someone becomes a judge, they become this sort of all-powerful god who can do whatever in a case. And like you said, there aren't many checks and balances. That's what our political system is based on, is having these branches, having checks and balances. But at that high level of a judgeship, there isn't much of that. There's a push, actually, to have a better practice at the United States Supreme Court level, because who is looking at those folks? Who is ensuring that they are complying with ethical rules and things like that? I think there is a lot of outcry about the absence of accountability in the judicial branch.
I mean, it's only as good as the people in it, and I'm sure. We know there are great judges out there. There's people that really are there for the right reason. But again, it is only as good as the people, and you are naturally going to get some in there that are not the greatest individuals, compelling enough to get into the positions. But you're essentially making someone a god to a certain extent without any but other gods in the universe that can actually step in and stop something, unless it, they murdered somebody, something really horrible. They put themselves in some sort of peril, but their opinion holds such weight. And that's, I don't know. There's so many cases, and I know you are far more into this world than I am, where it's just like, what the hell? How is this fair? It's not a perfect system. It's better than most other countries still, but it certainly feels like there's room for improvement.
Well, 100%. And like you said, there, decisions can be life-changing. They can literally change the lives of the accused, of victims, of people in the community. And one thing, too, is that these folks are humans. They have their own backgrounds. All of them, or nearly all of them, were lawyers before. Mm-hmm. And so they practice on one side or the other. And in fact, in Colorado, there is a disproportionate number of former prosecutors who are on the bench. And so there's this concern that, hey, is the bench sort of leaning towards the prosecution? So those concerns exist in other states.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, and people are people. I mean, they're going to have their leanings one way or another, as unbiased as they want to be. But yeah, it feels very weird our state right now with having judges like this so blatantly acting out? I mean, is this, these things weren't even like, you know, under the table or something where it'd be really hard to like, oh my God, look what they did. It's like, just flat out. No, we're not going to let you hear that. So bye. Tough luck. Yeah.
Totally. And you look at, you know, not only the Richard Allen trial, where some unusual measures were taken by the judge to just kick off the defense attorneys because she didn't like something they did like that. That's very unusual. And then you look at the Young Thug trial. The former judge in that case met with the prosecutor and a witness outside of the defense's presence, had this ex parte meeting. And so these you know, potentially shady interactions are happening in cases all across the country, and we don't even hear about most of them.
It's just like, and we go, why? Well, because they can. Because, yes, it's unethical, it's shady, but nothing's going to stop them, and there's not any repercussions in most cases for them to not do that. It's a weird place. Let's talk about the next steps for Richard Allen in the Delphi murder case. Obviously, he's been found guilty, and we've kind of been joking the whole time after all of the issues with this trial. He has a get a new trial free card. Not quite the same as a get out of jail free card. What's the steps from here for Richard to try and plead his case to wherever it goes?
So in most states, first he has to request, make a motion for a new trial, citing errors in the trial, but that motion is made to Judge Gold. And so I think we all know that's a foregone conclusion, how she's going to rule on that. Then you go to the appellate level, and he's got some real potential outs here. One of the biggest, I think, is that in most, in every state that I'm aware of, there's case law that says the judge cannot exclude the only defense that the defense is running, even if the judge doesn't like it. And this Odinism thing was really kind of central to the defense that Richard Allen wanted to run. It was excluded. That in and of itself could provide grounds to overturn the conviction and grant a new trial.
Would the only options for this be a new trial? Could any court look at this whole thing and go, this was a kangaroo court and your conviction is overturned?
You know, it's at least possible, but that's very rare. Usually, the court has to find what's called structural error in order to just completely throw out the case to say that, hey, this thing was so fundamentally unfair that Richard Allen just had no real shot at winning. Those rulings are few and far between.
Does this case meet that bar, in your opinion?
Structural error is tough because oftentimes we're looking at extreme examples of like the lead detective and the judge colluding the lead prosecutor having a romantic relationship with a central witness that could color the testimony. There are certainly some alleged serious errors in this case. Does it rise to structural error? I think a court would be hard pressed to make that finding.
So, okay, it goes, Gull is not going to say, yes, of course, we're going to grant this appeal because
I screwed everything up.
I'm finally, it was me. It's not you, it's me. Let's do this all over. So it goes to the appeals court. How long of a process are we talking about here? How long does this take?
Oh gosh, the entire appellate proceedings can be years and years. We'll get to the appellate level and we'll see what they do. But even if the appellate level says, hey, there were these errors, we're going to grant you a new trial, the prosecution could appeal that appellate decision. They could go to the higher court, which I believe is termed the Supreme Court out there in Delphi. And then the prosecution could say, no, there weren't any errors. Keep this guy in jail while we continue sorting this out. We could be looking at months, but more likely years before we receive any kind of final appellate opinion on the case.
Obviously, the way that they have fought tooth and nail, it seems, to put Richard Allen away for whatever their reasons are, and that's assuming if he's innocent, it goes deep. I mean, very deep to have kind of railroaded him in the way that they did. They have a very vested interest in not letting this man out financially because he could very easily sue the hell out of the town and bankrupt it. And they probably don't want that. I mean, I've seen other cases. I brought this one up. I pissed off half of Northeast Wisconsin the other day when I brought up the Stephen Avery case in Northeast Wisconsin. Sure. It was on Green Bay Radio, and I made
feelings about that case.
I made this analogy. I'm like, just similarly to how, I mean, assuming, you know, Manitowoc, they had to pay out several million to him, but then they found him guilty or convicted him of this other murder, and then that all kind of went away. Kind of a similar type setup, if you read the tea leaves, it seems. They have no interest in this. If the court does decide, if the eventually, after going back and forth with appellate, decide for a new trial, does it go back to Gull? Does it go somewhere else? I mean, does the appellate court have any dictation into who's going to try this thing and where?
Good question. Not necessarily. Like, the appellate court doesn't get to say, you get a new trial and we want this other judge to do it. They don't have, their power does not extend that far. And so if he got granted a new trial, you know, there would certainly be an argument that Judge Gull should not retry it, especially if she was the basis for the error, if such an error is found. So it would go back to the trial level. But yeah, I mean, they certainly have a vested interest, the government, in not allowing that to happen financially. And also the onus thing, like, there are some correctional officers who are allegedly wearing patches that were symbolic of Odinism or something. You know, who knows what's going on in this little community and how far some of those groups could extend. We just don't know.
Yeah. So if it does, and we're just kind of playing scenarios here, if it does eventually go back, it could end up there again, and could you have a judge excluding the same things all over again? I mean, or would the appellate say, you can't exclude this in round two?
Yeah, typically the appellate court would say, hey, Judge Gull improperly excluded the Odinism defense, let's just say, for example.
Yeah.
Therefore, if there's a new trial, you cannot exclude that. And so we'll see kind of what errors the appellate court may or may not find and how that could shape a new trial and really give a fuller picture to this jury if such errors are found, if a new trial is granted.
Yeah, yeah. Future of Richard Allen behind bars. We obviously, he's already been tortured for a long time in solitary confinement and such. He's in there for, the sentencing hasn't happened yet, but likely a very long time. Prison doesn't really treat, you know, people who are convicted of murdering children or have any sort of sexual offense very well. This is not looking good. I mean, he already has lost his mind, for lack of a better term, once. It seems that he did come back. Keeping him alive through this process, I think, is almost the big concern here.
It is a very real worry on multiple fronts. One is the external threat. So like you said, you know, someone who's convicted of killing two little girls is not going to be looked at fondly in prison by the other prisoners. He could become a target. On top of that, the reports indicate that he was really psychologically unraveling and engaging in behavior that could constitute a threat to himself. And so, he would have to remain alive during the pendency of these appeals to see any benefit from them. And I think there's a very real concern that could not happen.
What about somebody getting involved in this case, like an Innocence Project or something of that nature, as he's going through the appeals process, investigating this, advocating for this, but maybe in investigating, finding new evidence? That could also be a window into a new trial as well, could it not? And what is the bar for that?
Oh, certainly. And it brings to mind the Scott Peterson case. Mm-hmm. The Innocence Project got involved with his case and attempted to procure and do further testing on some evidence that wasn't appropriately considered at the trial level. So here, you know, the standard would be if you found new evidence and that there was a reasonable probability that the admission of that new evidence would cause the jury to come to a different conclusion, meaning you can't have evidence of guilt that is so overwhelming that it would overshadow the new evidence. New evidence has to be material, and it has to have a likelihood of changing the outcome. So it's a high bar.
It feels like the investigation was done extremely poorly. It feels like there's a lot of evidence out there that is ripe for the picking if you can find it in this case. I'm very curious about the digital footprints of many of the other individuals in this, Elvis to the Keegan Klein, everybody, and just see what was being communicated on these devices, if they can even go back to that. All of that stuff. There's so many things here that don't seem to have been looked into to the level of which they could. The voice. You just had the officer saying, yeah, that's him. What's your comparison? I just think it is. We could do that. I mean, there's a lot of, and I don't know that you're going to get very conclusive results in the voice because it's a really shitty recording, but it's something. I mean, I would just think you could find a handful of things in this case that weren't even admitted or allowed into evidence that are, in fact, evidence. What about the things there that weren't admitted into evidence, into the court? Can that be considered new evidence if the judge never allowed it in the first place?
Yes, I think that any evidence that was not initially admitted in the trial could be considered new evidence by an appellate court. Some appellate courts might say is like, hey, you tried to get this evidence in and the judge just didn't like it or didn't think it was legally appropriate. So that's not the same as like discovering some new smoking gun at an alternative suspect's house.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of stuff that didn't come in. And that gentleman, Ronald Logan,
yeah.
I think that there could be more attention paid to him and other potential alternative suspects. Alternative suspect evidence is usually qualifying as potentially new evidence that can get a new trial.
How on earth Keegan Klein was not connected to this under the name Anthony Schatz is baffling. I mean, you literally have a person who is a child predator, is away now that they, when they looked into him, but he literally talked about meeting the girls the day they were murdered. How is that something else you wouldn't look into? And if it wasn't him, who did he tell that he was going to meet these girls? Who did he tell where these girls are going to be if he had knowledge of that? It just, that seems to me like just this beacon of light possibly for Richard Allen, if it can be accepted. But Gull said no to all of these things.
You know, yeah, it was I think, an improper ruling. And my understanding is that Keegan Klein gentleman may have had actual direct contact with Libby at some point. Like, he's talking with these child victims who later turn up murdered. On top of that, he's a known sexual predator, at least according to the reports I've read. And so, you know, why not look at him a little more closely? And hopefully the defense team on the appellate side is going to marshal up all of this evidence to give to new eyes, a new judge on the appellate court, and say, please take another close look at this and see if this should have been admitted.
Oh my gosh, there's just so many things in this case. I get more angry as I continue to go down the line in the list. Like, oh yeah, and there's this too. And I mean, there's so many, I forgot many things. Like, oh yeah, they did that as well. It's shocking. All right. Well, he's guilty for now. Hopefully some other things can happen, because this just does not seem like justice was served, in my opinion, at least.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in. And then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless, unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.